Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for joining us this week. On this week's program, we'll hear from Kelly Ripple, co-founder and president of Planted Association of Kansas. We'll also hear from Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin's also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney & Evans. But first up on the program, we'll hear from Kelly Ripple. Again, Kelly is the co-founder and president of Planted Association of Kansas. Kelly, how you doing today?
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. It's great to get some folks in Kansas on the program first time, so we're very happy to have you on here. Now, Kelly, again, as the co-founder and president of Planted Association of Kansas, tell us what Planted Association of Kansas is and what you guys do, what you're all about.
Yeah, so Planted Association of Kansas, we are a stakeholder group. We represent all regions of the state. And we represent really the representation of this new industry. We provide advocacy, networking, and educational opportunities to members. And we really just want to make sure that, you know, best practices and evidence-based and sustainable use is available to all Kansans for hemp.
Well, obviously, education, very important. How long have you guys been established?
So we were technically established in 2019. We had ongoing discussions since 2017 as Kansans for Hemp, which is the original coalition that I helped create, helped with legalization. So as a result of traveling the state, listening to communities and questions from farmers, we really kind of galvanized a stakeholder group that really wanted to see the industry move forward, and that's how we formed Planted.
Okay, and do you have a membership?
We do, yes.
Okay.
We have members all across the state now, and we actually teamed up with Hemp Biz Conference and Christy Lunsford out of Colorado, and we held the first Kansas Hemp Symposium in 2018. So we had over 300 attendees there. It was a large event. Folks came from all over. And really, there's a growing interest in farmers all across the state.
And where in Kansas are you guys located? Is there a central location?
There is, yes. We are registered at the address in Topeka, which is where I am located. I'm from Topeka originally. I come from a long line of civil servants and farmers myself. And I'm from the capital city, Topeka, and that's where we're at. But we have folks all over the state, which is it's serving those communities and regions well.
Now, Kelly, don't shoot me for asking this question, but, you know, in my generation, when I think of Kansas, one of the first things I would think of is the Wizard of Oz, because it's just, you know, I'm from the generation where it was only once a year that you got to watch it, and everybody looked forward to it every year. And I guess, you know, in preparing for this interview, I looked around and looked at some things, and I thought, you know, I never really knew where Uncle Henry's farm was located. Was there ever a location for Uncle Henry's farm, or was that just somewhere in Kansas?
Well, that's a great question. I'm from the part, and which is much more urbanized. I do know that there is a farmstead. I believe it's more central in western Kansas. And there is an Oz museum that's located in Wamego, which is about an hour or so west of Topeka.
And you've never been to the museum?
Oh, I've been to the museum.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say, how could you not? It'd be like being in Indianapolis and never going to the Indy 500.
Exactly. Yeah, no, but yes, there's no place like home, and I love Kansas, and I hope others come and experience it for what it is, because it is a wonderful place.
Well, there you go. Just some great information you don't get every day. We do appreciate the insight there, Kelly. But I digress. We'll get back to hemp. Kelly, tell us how you got involved in the hemp industry. What drove you to get involved?
So when I was about 12 or 13, we had DARE class in middle school. And I came home And I asked my parents, you know, what do you know about this plant that we're learning about, this marijuana? And my dad said, I was a part of some research at K-State in the 1970s, and we tried to find the best ways to kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't find a good way
to kill marijuana.
Well, what they thought was marijuana.
Oh.
In fact, it was hemp,
okay.
Which I learned later. But ultimately, I thought, you know, this is kind of weird. We're trying to figure out ways to kill something that we know grows well here. And here we're also the generation that's being told, you're going to save the planet by getting away from fossil fuels and taking out plastics and petrochemical and go to more regenerative sources of energy. And I thought that why would we be trying to kill something? It just didn't make sense. So that kind of stuck with me. I did a lot of, primary research. I just was, and that was galvanized once I went to college at Emporia State. So I guess long story short, I wanted to get as much background as I could about humanity's relationship with cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2015, I went to the National Cannabis Summit in Denver. The next year, I went to CannaGrow Expo, also in Denver. And then in that time, I got with a group working on medicinal cannabis legalization in Kansas, they're still going strong. And I helped form the coalition Kansans for Hemp. And I represented Kansans for Hemp in 2017 at NoCo Hemp Expo, the fifth one out in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And, from there, we formed Planted and legalization happened. I was then appointed by the Kansas Department of Agriculture to the Industrial Hemp Research Advisory Board. So I was part of the rules and regulation process in Kansas. I helped the group administer a license to become processors or cultivator distributors of hemp. So I'm now potentially looking into getting into the industry and seeing how else we can help people.
And talk about some of the other folks that have been right there with you in that fight in Kansas.
We have a really diverse and dedicated group of people and entities that span multiple sectors in Kansas. And, you know, Kansas has gone through some pretty hard times over the past 10 years. And we have representation from all kinds of businesses and organizations. And really everyone is coming together on some really core issues about just public health in general and needing to be able to do things correctly so it can benefit everyone. And I want to thank, I have to give a shout out to Bleeding Kansas Advocates who've been doing this for over 10 years. Now the Kansas Cannabis Business Association. So really we've got some wonderful partners and synergy that's going on.
And as the co-founder and president of the Planted Association of Kansas, I assume you're dealing pretty closely with some of the farmers out there.
Yes. Yeah. We're dealing with farmers. We're dealing with, lobbyists. We're dealing with a lot of diverse, diverse people. And of course, Kansas is predominantly rural. So, a lot of farming groups, trying to get into some co-ops and, we've worked in the past with Kansas Farm Bureau and bringing some education to the state. So, yeah, a really good relationship with the Department of Agriculture. And it's been interesting to see the demographics of people interested in hemp, because someone asked me once, well, what type of farmer is getting into hemp? And it spans it's the whole gamut. We've got young farmers who are just starting out, college kids who are coming back to their folks' farms who are transitioning to hemp.
Mm-hmm.
We've got old folks who are just wanting to try it out, and we have our elders that are interested again in reintroducing hemp. So it's pretty wonderful to see.
You know, that's interesting. You bring up the college kids wanting to come back to the farm and experiment with hemp. Do you think there's some folks that are literally going back to the farm because of hemp that maybe they would not have had their interest piqued by the typical corn, soybeans and wheat, that sort of thing, but hemp really grabs them and wants to bring and they want to come back and try to save the farm or just, utilize it in a way that it hasn't been utilized before?
Absolutely. it is happening. And I've heard personally from farmers who have said, we're doing this as a way to mitigate the risk. And we don't want our kids to inherit debt. And at the rate that, that commodities are going, the way markets have gone, they would be. And reintroducing hemp into their portfolio and what they're trying to do long term, it has saved farms. And I did speak with a farmer in Southwest Kansas, and he said, we're doing this, and our kids are coming home. They're bringing their friends. Hemp is a huge opportunity to really coalesce a lot of different disciplines. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking STEM. It requires chemistry. It requires agronomy, horticulture. I mean, it all the way to processing and manufacturing. So, you know, engineering. There's just a lot of growing opportunity, and it's exponential.
And Kelly, you've got your finger on the pulse of what's going on out there, obviously. We've talked to a lot of the folks around the Midwest the last few weeks, and they've said a lot of the farmers that grew for CBD, they had nowhere to sell that product. It's still sitting there, hanging there. They're still trying to find somebody to purchase that. What are the farmers coming into the new season? What's their mindset? Are they do they have a place to sell their product this year already, or are they coming back in without a buyer this year?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Good and great point. And it's true. Folks who were looking at the CBD and biomass market for several years had known that you know, there was going to be this big bubble and the market would go a different direction. I think some people were somewhat surprised that it came so soon, I guess. But it was kind of predictable. And yeah, there was just a huge amount of biomass that was out there on the market last year, and it just, 2019 was not a good year because there was so much. But at the same time, growing anything in 2019 was pretty risky and mm-hmm. wasn't successful in a lot of terms. Didn't matter what it was, but hemp, especially in Kansas, was one of those that suffered. And yes, folks did. They either didn't plant with a contract in place with a processor. They, you know, things didn't work out for whatever reason. There are multiple factors involved with all that. And I do have confidence that in Kansas, we have some pretty good processing facilities that are around. And one of the limitations and kind of why the Plant Association is doing what we're doing, we need a supply chain connector mm-hmm. and a business to business interface that we're actually working on as a technology solution. But the Department of Ag is only allowed to give just first and last name of individuals who are licensed. They can't give contact information because it violates a state statute mm-hmm. privacy, but we need folks to know where they can take their product to and who is, you know, who are trusted sources, who are doing things correctly. So, you know, that's going to be an ongoing initiative that, you know, connecting the supply chain and rebuilding it is every state's prerogative, I think. And we're all kind of in that boat together. We will see some changes moving forward with the commercial program. Kansas, Our submission to the USDA was approved. Now it's just a matter of the Kansas legislature approving rules and regulations. We're being held up by political games, unfortunately, but that has to happen soon. And once that does, I think a lot of things will start to open up.
Well, you know, last year, like you pointed out, last year there were a lot of states that had no processors at all. This yeah. year, there are quite a few processors. I know in Indiana starting to come online. Mm-hmm. Do you see that in Kansas?
We do. Yeah. I just got word the other day that there's one going in Southeast Kansas. We've got a couple in South Central and more towards the central area of the state. You know, and you are correct when you said, Kansas had about probably 90% of farmers grew for floral material for CBD oil. And I think going into this year, folks will be looking at some of those cultivars still, but I think we will start to see a gravitation towards fibrous, multi and dual purpose varieties, because there are so many other commodities, you know, end products that can be made from hemp. CBD and CBG, high cannabinoid profile varieties, those are sought after. Those aren't going away. But I think overall in Kansas, outdoors, people are going to be looking at probably a variety of different cultivars for multiple products.
All right. Once again, we're speaking with Kelly Ripple. Kelly is the co-founder and president of Planted Association of Kansas. And Kelly, I know you've got you're working personally on some papers, some information that you unearthed back a few years ago. So actually, it was called Unearthing Cannabis Roots to Support Future Growth. I dug into that just a little bit, but tell us what that's all about and why that excites you.
So in 2017, I uncovered the research publications that my father was actually a part of at K-State in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And there were ultimately three studies that I discovered. And I actually did it at Hale Library on the K-State campus. And someone had to literally go into a vault and scan a paper copy. So one of those full text documents is actually, like, from what I understand, one of the only digitized copies of this study. Huh. This is not open access information. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You can't go out on the internet and find it. And I think there, you know, paywalls and open access, that's a large discussion. But I think it's really important for folks to know that this exists, because I think other research could exist in other states as well.
So you say, is it locked away in the vault to keep people from accessing it to get the information, or because it's something that they want to preserve, or both?
I think it's arguable that it could be some of both. And, mm-hmm. You know, that's, I couldn't really, I can't really, you know, make a conclusion on that, but because it has to do with intent from the side of the university. However, what I can tell you is in these documents, I found some pretty startling things. And ultimately, they studied what they thought was marijuana in Kansas. Come to find out, it was the fibrous type.
Ah.
So this was at the same time that the Controlled Substance Act went into effect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That grouped hemp and cannabis and all of it together, and it just outlawed everything.
Do you anticipate that was because the science, they just did not have enough knowledge to be able to differentiate between the two?
Well, that is the argument, yes. And no, they did not have the science. But what this document that I found proves is they actually had documentation that proved the opposite. They knew that what was growing here was a fiber type, mm-hmm. and yet they made it illegal anyway because they were claiming it was a drug type.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the other pieces about this was the actual study that my father helped with. He was just a student. He was earning a biology degree, and he helped this graduate student who's doing this project. Well, come to find out that those studies were overseen by the Marijuana Control Commission. So law enforcement was involved with this,
mm-hmm.
and it was paid for by Eli Lilly, which is a global pharmaceutical conglomerate.
Housed in Indianapolis, Indiana.
You know, I will also say that Eli Lilly still pays for research at K-State University, I believe, and potentially others.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the kinds of conflicts of interest that people need to understand and also perhaps challenge. Because those types of standards are not accepted now, and they're really in violation of research integrity standards and guidelines. So I have spoken about this issue to multiple people, and I've presented at the World Hemp Congress in Slovenia about this. But this is kind of some groundbreaking information, and I hope that, you know, institutions start looking at it a little more closely.
Well, we'll certainly follow up with you and find out where this leads. But it's always interesting to get new information, especially something you can say was uncovered from the vaults.
There's also one other interesting thing about these studies. They mm-hmm. were cited by the 1976 taxonomic report that came out of Canada. Mm-hmm. And people have confirmed that that document is what was used to put THC into U.S. The Controlled Substance Act.
Do you think that was just, again, because they did not have the knowledge to understand what it was, or was there another reason that they wanted to get rid of hemp as well as marijuana?
Yeah, there were clear intent of exclusivity, corporate exclusivity. And of course, we know the documented history of, William Randolph Hearst, Harry Anslinger, all of the wood paper chemical companies, all of those things were part of the equation. Those were all factors. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly dig back into this at a future date, but it's always interesting when you can uncover things like this and see what could have changed years and years ago, if not for big business, big corporate and what have you. But again, we don't want to go down the rabbit hole with that, but that's some interesting information. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to bring that up and talk about that a little bit. So we will look at that again in the future. Once again, Kelly Ripple, co-founder and president of the Planted Association of Kansas. Kelly, anything else that we need to hit on here?
No, feel free to reach out anytime. We're at Kansans for Hemp. That's Kansans with an N and then number 4 hemp on Twitter. We're also on Facebook. You can see Planted Association of Kansas. Our website is plantedks.org, and see what kind of resources we have out there for you. And yeah, we're here to help, and I really appreciate the time today.
Well, thanks again, Kelly, and you certainly have represented the state of Kansas very well. We do appreciate it. As we continue on, we're going to speak with Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council president, as well as the vice president of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. Justin, how you doing today?
I'm hanging in there, Jason. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic. And again, we appreciate you coming back and being with us this week. We know we've got some updates to get to, so let's do that. Let's start with the licensing in Indiana to grow hemp. I know we're up there and hitting the threshold here pretty soon.
Yeah, so we wanted to give a quick update, kind of the status of where we are in Indiana in terms of licenses and acreages. So we have right now 256 licenses issued as of last Friday. And to remind everybody, Indiana, our regulators capped the number of licenses to 300. So we have, 44 or so left licenses left for 2020.
So it's kind of like the lottery. There's only 44 left. You need to get in and get one now.
Yeah. And these went really fast last year, and they actually they have to cap it kind of halfway through last year. So this is interesting that, from my perspective, I think farmers and people are actually, instead of being mystified, they're actually doing their own research and trying to understand the market and figure out where they fit in before kind of just diving in. So,
well, that would usually be the best way to go about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And also one change too from this year is licensees do have to have a letter of intent or a contract or some other offtake agreement for that license. So I think that's, again, making people work backwards instead of working, hey, I need the license. That's my first step.
Right. Now go ahead and explain what you just said there.
So I think just like any other business, I think this year people are understanding that you need to work backwards and figure out who is going to buy either your biomass or end product or whatever value you're creating, who is going to buy that from you.
And are they having problems finding people to buy that product right now?
I think it definitely depends on what you're growing for. It's definitely difficult getting in now, especially with the COVID stuff. But I think that also presents an interesting opportunity for a new industry like hemp to try to find new homes.
So if I'm listening to this right now and think, okay, I'm a little late to the game and I there's some licenses left out there. I want to go throw my hat in the ring and try to grow hemp this year. There's only 44 licenses left. I've got a lot of work to do before I can apply for that license.
Yeah. And so that's really for a commercial license. And to be clear, we still have research licenses available. So Jason, in your scenario, if you're just trying to figure out kind of what you want to do, I'd encourage you to go apply for and receive a research license. you know, and grow an acre, 5 acres, 10 acres, whatever, and really understand going into it, it's going to be a learning year for you. So that option's still available.
And what's the minimum acreage that you're allowed to grow?
It depends on the variety you're growing. Again, for CBD clones, I think it's an acre, and then for fiber and seed, I think it's a minimum of 20 acres. Mm-hmm. And again, that's for the commercial licenses. So if you wanted to do research, the Indiana Office of State Chemists they're great to work with. And I'm sure you guys could work something out if you have a legitimate research proposal.
And of course, this includes both indoor and outdoor growing.
That's right. Yes. So for outdoor acres right now of those licenses, it's roughly a little over 8,700 acres of outdoor acres planned for 2020 so far. And put that number in perspective, we licensed about 5,200 acres last year. So we do have some modest growth there, mm-hmm. And still interest that's growing. Of note, I think last year we had about 500,000 square feet of indoor grows licensed. And this year we're already at 1.7 million square feet. So that's, a huge increase.
Do you know if that breakdown is new people entering the industry, or is that people from last year that got their foot in the door and thought, hey, let's go ahead and double our acreage or something like that?
That's a really good question, and something we're going to hopefully be able to report on towards the end of the year.
Okay.
When we can better identify people. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of people, I would say there's more people than not who grew last year and that are growing again this year.
And the last few weeks we've talked to a lot of people from around the Midwest, and it seems to be, of course, most of the farmers are focusing, or last year at least, focused on CBD. Some are looking at fiber and grain this year that grew CBD last year. Do you know how that breakdown comes around?
So that's a great question. And the vast favorite for Indiana this year is CBD again. Mm-hmm. We have basically 635 grow sites around the state, and 436 of those are for CBD.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then we also have the second highest favorite category for Indiana right now is smokable hemp. Mm-hmm. So out of the 635, 112 of those grow sites are smokable hemp.
Okay.
That's, I think, just goes to show where the market is right now in terms of offtake agreements. Mm-hmm. Although I think the fiber and the grain side are definitely going to be around for a very long time, that supply chain is just now starting to get seriously developed. So I would see the number of fiber and grain licenses and production increase over the next 5 years here in Indiana substantially.
So the Lego industry hasn't really kicked up its ordering process from the hemp industry yet.
Not yet. You know, and the fiber stuff, that's a totally different variety of hemp to grow, different growing techniques, and, the processing side there on decorticating, still development. So mm-hmm. there's still mm-hmm. a lot to be figured out on that side.
Well, again, a lot of the folks we're talking to around the Midwest spoke about farmers that still have CBD hemp in or hemp for CBD in their barns. It's still drying. It's still ready for processing, and they had nowhere to go with it. So you're saying all of these 635 grow sites, 436 of which are planning to grow CBD, they already have a plan of where they're going to sell their product?
Yeah, at least on paper.
Okay.
Right? I mean, right, having a plan and executing are two different things.
Right.
And I'd also say that our Indiana's infrastructure in terms of processing is night and day just compared to last year.
Oh, okay. And what changes have been, do we see in that?
Well, you're seeing companies investing in communities all around the state to make more processing options available. Anywhere from northwest Indiana down to southeast Indiana, there's processors who are setting up shop, and it's really on the grower to go out and try to find those, and develop those relationships in order to get that license and say, hey, here's where my biomass is going.
Mm-hmm. Would it have been better in hindsight to spend a year getting the processors up and running before the farmers started planting, or would that have been even possible?
Well, that's a great, that's the chicken and the egg question, right? Ultimately, I think, you can plan as much as you want, but at the end of the day, this is still just a market.
Sure.
And at some point you got to open it up and just, you know, let people learn and make mistakes and grow. And that's really how you, you know, develop a strong and lasting supply chain.
Okay, Justin, something else that you wanted to bring to the forefront this week. We've got something out there called the HEROES Act. Talk about what that is and what that means for the hemp industry.
So this is Congress's response. Geez, I don't know, third or fourth response to the global COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay.
So it's a 1800, you know, over 1800 pages, $3 trillion worth of spending. So there's obviously a lot going on in the bill. For the hemp industry specifically, there is some huge language in there that would be helpful to the industry. And that's known as the Safe Banking Act.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually legislation that passed the House of Representatives back in September of 2019. With a pretty healthy vote margin. It was like 3-1 in favor. So it's a bipartisan bill. And really what it's trying to do is give confidence to banks to interact with hemp companies and companies selling hemp-derived products.
Well, because we know it's almost impossible to even open up a bank account as a hemp company in some of these states.
Yeah, and really from my perspective or experience with clients here in Indiana, banks either won't do business with you, they'll charge you a monthly fee and treat you like you're a marijuana company.
Right.
So they basically charge you a compliance fee to deal with those regulations. Or they want to do it and they say yes, and then they get cold feet, you know, a year later and you know, you don't have a bank overnight all of a sudden.
And we won't mention any names, although we should, but I know I personally have been written a check from a hemp-based company and took that check to my bank, deposited it like I would any other check, and then received a notice in the mail that they were holding it for, I believe, it was at least 2 weeks, could have been about 3 weeks they were going to hold it. And that just floored me. It's like, well, were these people up for, were they flagged for scamming or what? And all they could say is, no, sir, it's just the industry they're related to. No rhyme or reason whether they had bounced checks, anything like that. So just bizarre.
Yeah. And to be clear, it's not really the bank's fault. Their regulators will essentially contact them and say, you need to shut these guys out, basically.
I see. So that language now that obviously for this HEROES Act to go through, that language or that practice would have to change.
Absolutely. And it actually creates basically a safe harbor for banks to interact with the hemp industry. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, I should notice the entire cannabis industry. So it's going to benefit the marijuana industry where that's legal in those states.
And you mentioned it's a bipartisan bill, so it's unlikely this $3 trillion package will go through. The Republicans will certainly fight that, but being a bipartisan act, as you said, does it look like that should slip through regardless?
Well,
slip through as in get passed?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what we're hoping for. The HEROES Act is not a bipartisan bill. I think only one Republican voted for it, so it's essentially a party line vote. And really our message to our members and the whole industry is get on your senators today and make sure that whatever bill passes in whatever form, the Safe Banking Act language is included in that. You know, and it's difficult to have these conversations when the overriding bill is so political and
Sure. Obviously
has such vast consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But I really encourage our members, and if you're not comfortable having the conversations, learn how to get comfortable. You know, reach out to their offices and educate them and let them know of your personal experience with banking or whatever, and tell them how much this can actually help, everyday Americans.
Well, and the reason that's important is because, again, this entire $3 trillion package is not going to be passed. So they're going to start picking and choosing what items
Right. Will
be included. And the more you can get your voice into their ear, that's going to help that act.
Right. And we're not asking for any money. We're just asking for, you know, give the financial institutions confidence to work with us.
All right. Anything else we have here, Justin?
I think that's all I had today. But I think things are really moving very quickly in the industry, and we look forward to what our season looks like here in Indiana.
Well, Justin, as always, great to hear from you. And again, this is Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President. Justin's also the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. And as we start to turn the corner, at least it feels like we're starting to turn the corner a bit on this COVID situation and getting back to the into the public. Do we see any opportunities in the near future to be getting together as a hemp community, Justin?
So the governor announced yesterday we're the state's moving to stage three, all except three counties, on Friday, which is a couple days earlier than originally planned. So I think we're certainly headed in the right direction. And, I think Governor Holcomb and Commissioner Dr. Box makes it very clear. Really, this all depends on individual actions and kind of where we end up as a state in the next couple months. So we'll see how Hoosiers react.
All right. Well, hopefully soon we'll be back to the hip happy hours.
Absolutely.
All right. Justin Swanson. Justin, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right, and that's going to do it for this week's show. Thanks for tuning in and listening to the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast, brought to you by the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. You can find more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, as well as our entire catalog of podcasts, on the website, MidwestHempCouncil.com. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more. So long, everybody.